specialty product, and all of a sudden it had to become a big body to make any money. The raw material, butene-1, was a stream we had a synthetic SBR manufacturer. And it was a byproduct, they're just dying to get rid of it. The shortages came, and they came back and they said, look, we want to recycle the stream back in to make some more synthetic, and the customers are dying for it, and we can't sell you the nickel a pound of this, 4 cents a pound, whatever it was, for the stream. We've got to have 25 cents a pound, which is the ultimate value of putting it into making polymers. Well, they said, we can't make 20 million pounds, we can't pay 20. Well, we expanded the plant, and we still couldn't make the part. The heat exchangers kept bending, warping and bending. Then nobody really wanted to buy from us because we were the sole worldwide supplier of this product, and they were not about to develop whole new systems around one supplier, but a not a dependable supplier, because we'd be down for 3 months or 4 months and run for 3 months, and then the heat exchangers would bend again. So nobody really wanted to deal with it, so we raised our prices considerably. So our people were losing about $500,000 a month. We were still a fairly small company. And it was always going to be next month, always this account's going to break, always next. Finally, after about a year and a half, I said, guys, we're going out December 31st. I don't give a damn. December 31st, that unit's shutting down. Enough of this $500,000, $400,000, $600,000. I said, we're going to sell it. So we put together books and offered it out. It really belonged to a big company that was in the business and needed a little adjunct, a little 20, 30 million pounds of mouse milk to go with their billion pounds of this, you know. And it was a good product. It replaced chlorinated PVC and it was good in hot water pipe application, actually cold water too, but hot water special. Anyway, everybody looked at it. Nobody really rushed. It was now, I forget, don't quote me, August, September, I reported to the board almost weekly in writing where we stood. Everybody turned it down. We had a board meeting in October, and one of our directors was Michelle, had been Michelle. He said, I'm not so sure you reached the right people there. It seems logical for a fit with their program. It really is logical. The stuff that they're doing, it's like peanut nothing for them. You know, it's a little plant. It's a nothing. It's almost like a pilot plant for them. He said, you reached the wrong people. Would you mind if I interjected myself at a different level? Boy, anything. Within a week, I got a call. They sent 14, 15, 16 people back again to see the plant, do the economics. I was in California in November. They flew out in November. We sat down in Los Angeles and they made a deal. In an hour, it was a handshake, and that was it. We saw the plant. And it's turned out they've expanded the plant. They know how to make resins. They know how to make heat exchangers, which we didn't. They shut the laboratory down, put it right in their laboratory, so, oh God, what they saved that laboratory. A couple of million dollars just by not running the laboratory. Anyway, that's our experience into residence, our sole experience. Lost a lot of money, gained a lot of experience, but that's true of life.
Yes, it is. You mentioned laboratories, and I want to ask you about that too, because you were always, the company was always concerned about technical, say, a service and for its customers. When did the first laboratory start? When did you start doing your own laboratory application?
Well, since I've been with the company, I've always been lots of laboratories. I'm just trying to think. Of course, Lawrenceville in 1924, the first plant, had to be the first laboratory. It was a job or a broker. We didn't do technical work on making paints or making rubber products or anything like that. And Lawrenceville developed asphalts, experimented with polymer additives, experimented with catalysts and asphalt, which turned out pretty good, phosphorus, pentoxide, P2O5 added to the oxidation cycle, would make what they call potting compounds, as you see in your transformer compound. So there was some laboratory work almost from the beginning. See, as a manufacturer, you have to do it. Now it's a question, do they overdo it or underdo it? I don't know today. To think you needed more. Today, price is getting so prevalent. You can do all the laboratory work in the world, somebody can walk off the street with a quarter of a cent a pound and you're out on your ass. Literally. And I can understand it. You see the monstrous loss of the Firestone, $300 million last year, of the rubber companies. They all want lots of research, development, service, but nobody wants to pay for it. So you can overdo it at times.
somewhere in my file here I have something that, well, I'll raise it and you can say whether you want to talk about it or not. But it's a report from the American Chemical Society about termination of laboratory employees. Didn't meet the ACS guidelines or something like that.
We got sued. We got a hanging judge there, Judge Sorokin or something.
Oh.
He is tough. He's got us. Have you ever heard that name before?
Oh, yes.
After this was all over, I called our people in. What did we do wrong? So we'll do it again. Tell us what we did wrong. If you want to talk to our legal people, I'd be happy to raise this. What did we do? So let's now we learn from this. I swore in the Bible, with outside consultant, did everything right. There's not one thing they changed on that layoff. Not one thing, but we lost the case. It's called a hanging judge, Judge Roy Bean. He's tough. So we did have a cutback in the laboratory and made that more of a sort of a research laboratory. It's now a product technical service laboratory crossing over divisions where we do, pardon me, joint sulfonation. Three or four divisions will do sulfonation, so we'll do it there instead of each division doing it. Plus the lab are dedicated now and paid for it. My Arcus has most of its people out there where they're keeping them downtown Brooklyn when they get mugged every night. We shut down all the research work, do everything. Argus management came up here, and the Argus technical people went to Oakland out there. So it's now sort of a pure research. We were not looking for another nylon. Really, most of it was divisional, but that's where the layoff came. And we lost the case when we paid. It wasn't big, but we got bad publicity out of it. We were a bad place to work. And yet that's the way we were. Still today, if we deal with it, we follow the same pattern of layoff. It wasn't worth appealing. The amount of money settlement wasn't worth it, really.
There's also, reading some of the more current literature, some interesting articles about speculation on your successor here at the end of the last several years.
Well, it's all in place, as you know.
Yes, no, I understand, but there were, as I looked through some of the articles, I'd see one name and then...
I wasn't prepared to retire, but after, when I was 65, they asked me to stay three more years. No. I said, sure. But after three or four, 5, 6 months, I decided it's a mistake. That I really wanted to retire. I don't know which lawsuit it was, or which case, or which problem, but it was just a repetition. Business used to be fun. You go out and buy some companies, work with customers. Sales, God, it was fun. The last couple of years, it was no longer fun. And I tell our people here, if business is no longer fun, you better quit the company. I tell them, if you're not enjoying what you do, I couldn't think of anything worse. Getting up in the morning, going to work, and saying, oh shit, another day, another dollar. You reach the point as a teacher. In the beginning, it was exciting, and you liked it. If you retired, there was a reason.
Right?
It just was another day, another dollar, and life was dull and boring. So I decided that's what I wanted to get out of here. And I had a good successor in place by then. That's one of the reasons I want to get that way, a good successor. I said to myself, I'm going to retire when I'm 99. So what am I going to do then? In a wheelchair? What the hell am I going to do with my life in a wheelchair? If I'm going to retire at 99, I'm better off at 89. If I'm going to do it at 89, I'm better off at 79, I'm better off at 60, I'm better off now. And while I'm still young enough, I'm going to go enjoy things. I don't know why people stay after retirement. You went back to work, but you need the money. What's the difference? I can afford to retire. I'm serious. Were you bored retired? Were you bored being retired?
No, I had arranged to go and continue on with, to move into this position.
Oh, you just changed. You changed.
I changed. But I did take a retirement plan from the university.
Well, you never retired. You had to just, you changed jobs, didn't you? So the successor, I refused to talk about at the time because I wasn't prepared to even consider it. And things change every year or two. There's a whole new crop of young people coming up. I'm on the organization compensation committee now. They look at the aging. They say, oh, God, look at the number of people going to retire in the next 5 years. I said, so what? 5 years ago, you would have said the same thing. There's always the movement upward as long as we're promoting from within. So what? There'll be new people that aren't on the list even, that will be on the list. Hello? 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 Yes? Yes. I'm in a meeting now. I'll call back.
Let me go back to your earlier career, just so I could get it straight in my mind, your move through the company. As you said earlier, you were in sales in Chicago in 49, 50 you were in New Jersey, 51 you came here to the New York office. What was your position in 51? You were in charge of sales, were you?
I don't know, so long ago. Secretary Treasurer, 1952.
Okay.
But we all did everything. It was a nutty company, 1952. Sale. Remember I mentioned the word carbon black. I'll show you how important it was to us. Sales, jobbing, carbon black, and manufacturing products. So, carbon black was more important than all the rest of the jobbing. Mm-hmm. Manufacturing was picking up, carbon black was level, and we were slowly cutting down a little bit on the jobbing. Carbon black was the mainstream. But that was the major part of the business, that's the international part.
Secretary
Treasurer, I don't know what I did. I'm learning the business, I think that's good.
Well, by 55, you were executive vice president.
Let's see if I had a title in 53. Where was around got a job? Let's put it that way. Oh, man. You walk around. Executive Vice President Treasurer at 56. My father was a very impatient man. We had trouble in the Chicago plant. He'd go out there every month. He'd be unhappy. Whoever's the manager of the plant, he'd push aside, and the guy would be walking along and say, "You want to be plant manager?" No joke. It's the way he had about 8 plant managers in about 12 months. He was impatient for a result. But eventually got the right guy. We didn't lose anybody. The chief engineer, we'd go back to being chief engineer. Maintenance foreman, go back to maintenance.
Did you replace your father as chairman of the board then when he...
He retired in 19... I guess so, his retirement comes about 58, yeah.
But you didn't become president, CEO, until later on. Who was it?
Max Minnick, yes. Was grew up in marketing. Excellent marketing man, moved from Akron to New York, was a good outside, excellent outside man. And Max left and went to Borden Chemicals, had a Borden Chemical in Columbus, and then was shot and killed at an NPRA meeting in San Antonio. New Orleans. Was shot in the streets and killed. It's a big thing in the industry. He and two of our people were walking down the street. A wrong turn, went into a restaurant they were going to, ended up at a housing project. And two kids jumped down with guns on him, and he said, "He was a big man, Max, lovely man. And kids, I have grandchildren older than you," and pushed him aside, went bang, hit him here. And he fell down, the kid walked over and hit him a shot.
My God. What about the other two?
They got away. They didn't even get shot at. Ray Saunders, who just retired, was with him. There was confusion of who was the boss here. Max's children, first of all of Max's children, was Catholic and had 9 children. None of them stayed east. They all moved to the Midwest. And he wanted to get out of New York. None of the children stayed here. And he was offered the job by Gus Marusin, who had enough Borden. It was originally had a Borden chemical and then enough auto Borden. And I didn't want Max to leave. But there was, he was not, with confusion. He was, I guess I don't know what titles were, but people came to me for decisions, including Max. But I think his title was CEO. I think he was president and CEO, and I was chairman. I was the boss, and Max and I got along fine personally. I'll tell you the year, it was 1971, because I was racing overseas. I won the world championship.
I want to talk to you about that.
And here's where I raced. And about here, I only missed 24 days of work the whole year. I flew over on Thursday nights. I raced on Saturdays. I came back. Back in here, Max came in and handed me an envelope. Sealed. What is it, Max? He said, well, I'm taking a job with Borden. He said, it's back here. I said, I'm not going to open the envelope, Max. If I open the envelope, that's the end of my racing. I'm racing for the world championship. I'm first or second. And I said, I know my father. If you leave, I got to. I said, take it back. He said, no. He said, you keep it. I said, I'm not going to open it. Okay. He said, don't open it. Nobody knows what's in there. So finally, he said, you got to open it. He said, applied for schools for my kids out in Ohio. He said, I got my house on the market. He said, rumors are out. I'm resigning from the country club. Hello. I'm in the meeting, Jeff. You call me back about an hour. I said, man, so finally I had to open it. That's where I quit racing. Did not start. I quit right here. Those last two years of racing. Yeah. Did not start. But then I had things worked out. He was gone. But I refused to open the letter for about a good month. And that's when I took over both jobs. I had two good men. Bill Leisner ran the chemical division under Max. And Henry Sonneborn ran the petroleum part. So we still follow that format. Happy, happy. Both of them were very well off. Richer than I am, both of them. We bought their businesses. Leisner was the principal at Hargis, owned 60%, with a woman, Olga Nepke, owned 40%. And Henry was the nephew of Rudolph, and I guess Rudolph had taken care of the family, who'd been dead by then. And one came to me and said, look, the so-and-so is lovely. He'd make a great president, and it's fine with me. Henry would come and say, Bill Leisner would be a great president, it's fine with me. But if he is, I got a lot of stuff that I could do. He said, I worked all my life. I got a few dollars. I'd be so. If you make him president, which I vote for as a director, I'm gonna enjoy my life. And then Bill Leisner came and said the same thing. He said, Henry, make a great president. So same face. I took both jobs. In 1971, I was besides chairman, I was president, I was chief executive officer, and chief operating officer. All four jobs, which was a mistake, but I worked it out with them. They're both happy to work for me, but they both stayed. And then when Bill Leisner retired in 1976, as reaching the age of 65, Henry then took over as president. And I delegated pretty good, a reasonably good delegator. And everything worked smoothly. It was a good growth time for us. Sometimes you got to break the rules or vary the rules. Who was it says that? Wendy's or one of them, Burger King. Sometimes you got to break or bend the rules. So it worked out. But it's a mistake. The CEO should be looking over the president's shoulder, should be the devil's advocate to operation, should expect certain results, and the president needs something to bounce off of. There are really two jobs. I had them both, which wasn't fair. As chief operating officer, I could make a decision, and the CEO wasn't looking over my shoulder. So anybody that has both jobs, I tell them it's a mistake.
How long did that continue?
5 years.
5 years.
5 years. 71 to 75 or 6. But that was one of the reasons Max left. There was still a question who was the boss. And he would come to me for decisions. People come directly to me for decisions. We worked nicely together. We were great friends. But he went off as head of Borden Chemical. And he was happy in the Midwest.
Well, now that you raised the powerboat issue, I'd like to talk about that for a little bit. How you got into it, at least. Got started at.
Well, you get bored after I hurt my back playing golf.
You were quite a golfer.
I was a reasonably good golfer. I took a terrible shot on the third hole at Old Oaks. hit a rock under a two iron. It snapped my back. They carried me off the golf course. They literally carried me. My back went down. I couldn't straighten up. It was a long tour. It was the hardest hole in the course. It was 432-yard par 4, almost all up over the green. So even with a booming drive, to get it on the green, I almost got to hit into the hill and run up. I can't hit it far enough. If you hit it on the green, it's going to go over. Anyway, I had a magnificent drive. Magnificent. First time, I think, in 10 years I was using an iron instead of a wood to reach that green. And, and boom, there was a rock under that thing, and I'm telling you, my... So I don't remember the year, but I wore a body brace. I couldn't tie my shoes. I couldn't put my underwear on. I had to stand up against the wall. To this day, if I sneeze, I'll hold on. So I did nothing for years, a couple of years. And my wife said, you ought to do something. You know, you ought to get off your ass and you just sit around a weekend. We'd seen a race in Florida in Christmas time. And there was a boat show in January. My brothers, I said, made equipment for boats, built pumps and water pressure system. Went to the boat show. And there was this little 20-foot boat. And this is the boat that won the Pelican Harbor race in Miami last month. It was a famous race, the only race at that time. It was around Long Island Marathon. You know, to New York. Yeah. It went around Long Island, 243 right. miles, starting at Freeport, out to Montauk, down through the East River here, out around Rockaways, Coney Island, back to... God, that doesn't look so bad. So, make a long story short, I bought this 20-footer at the boat show in 1963. Not awful boat. I was petrified. Never had a boat. Never been in a boat. But it seemed like such fun. Push the throttle and go. Oh God. So it was so bad, I got nervous and chicken, and I got somebody else to drive it. They went about 12 miles. The gas tanks broke loose, and that was it. That was 1963. 1960, there was 62 for the 63 race. Okay. Again, I was in Florida in 63, and a friend, this Aaron, now you guys see, you got stuff on Aaron now. Iron Now at that time had started a boat company called Formula. He put in 5 boats for a Miami Key West race. Little boat, 23-foot boat called a Formula. And they came in, boom, boom, they were great boats. And again, at the boat show in January, there's Iron Now. And he's got these little boats, 23-foot Formulas. So I bought one again to run around Long Island. Much better boat than the 20-foot Allen. And I really liked that boat. I started learning boating. And... Now, ready to race out of Freeport in the morning, going out the inlet. The engine, I burned a hole in the piston going out the inlet. Never raced in 64. So, 63 and 64, I have 2 boats I haven't raced yet. Again, December of that year, Aronow was sold for a minute ago. It starts a company called Donzi. Donzi was his nickname. Don Aronow, the secretary, called him Donzi. So, he starts Donzi, which are 28 footers. And they again ran Miami to Key West, and they came in 1, 2, 3, or whatever it was. I saw him at the boat show in January of 65. He said, you want to sell one of those? He said, anyone you want, I'll sell you both. Pick your pick. I have 5 of them ready to race. So I bought one ready to race in January. I went down to Florida and raced in February of 65. By a stroke of luck, I won the race. Believe me, it was a stroke of luck. This guy broke down. This guy got lost. 65. There's the boat. There's the boat. We're starting right up here. Okay, that's the boat. Notice there's no padding. There's nothing.
Yeah,
see, yeah. You'll see as boats, it's the same boat. A couple of you look, bolsters on the back, compartments for you to go into. Look, you see compartmenting them there.
Oh, yes.
So you can't bump into each other. Anyway, that's my first race. First race I went to Denver. Don't ask me how. And I'm a big hero. Television. Anyway, I started boat racing now. That became my hobby. And the boating wasn't the back, because boating is up and down, not twisted, not hitting a two iron. And that's how I did that one. That's how I got into boating, get a hobby. And my wife didn't like me leaving for boating, so I left my wife. She said, you got to choose the boats for me. I said, I'm going to take the boats. But one race was in the Bahamas, and I would work and then go right to the airport. And I had a man that worked for me at Scarsdale would take my bags, because I didn't want to carry the bags on the train. I'd take my bags, meet me at the airport, and then I got my bags. So I'd go into race Florida or Bahamas, I forget which, and check my bag, went to Florida, went out, came home, and I met, opened it up, no clothes. All the clothes are taken out, books and newspaper. My wife was mad at me. I figured that's getting tough now. No clothes in the Bahamas, no shaving kit, no nothing. I got the message. Everybody laughed. I thought it was very funny. I didn't think it was so funny.
No, no.
So I got into boating and I raced from 64 to... I won the American Championship in 70. There's where I raced in 71. The World Championship on the minute I got my last race. I'm finished. I never set foot on a boat again.
Really?
My foot's never been on a boat. That was a great boat. Arano gave that to me as a present. Pretty good replica of it. Then he put Amway on there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's been, that's 20 years. 20 years this year I quit racing.
So what
was working? Nothing, but working ever since.
Yeah.
I dabbled a little bit in race cars.
I heard you had a dragster.
Now I got a dragster, but I did oval track racing for a couple of years. Where's the what's the picture? Where's the picture? Where is it? I don't know. I'm starting to pack, so I have to stuff it this one here. Anyway, I did oval track racing for 4 or 5 years. Not professional down in New Jersey, and then driving. It's easier, less, only 10 seconds.
What are you planning on doing next?
Well, I don't know. I've turned down 2 directorships. I'm going to stay active in what I'm active in. I'm a trustee of outside of hospital. I'm active in this and that. If I get a compensation committee tomorrow. Decide to do nothing for a year. Not accept anything. In February of next year, I'll decide what to do. Right now, I'm so damn busy. This new office is driving everybody a little nuts. I wanted the office nicer than... I don't want an office. I want it nicer than my home. I live right up the street here. I don't want to come in and do 2-3 hours work and go home and get my wife's hair, my new wife. So I want the office nicer than my home, and it is. It's a hell of a lot nicer than my home. It really is a beautiful office. We'll be moving in this week, and I'll see how that works out. I've just took a new garage where I got some cars I collect. A new 7,500 square foot garage down in Jersey. And I will say this, for a year before I retired, religiously, I took every Friday off. I wanted to see what I keep this year before. I think people are deciding that they've got to force themselves to take some time off to see if they like it. So, for a year, February of, almost all of 90, I took every Friday off. And I didn't sit around. And since 90 and 91, it's now been, 18, 17 months. I wanted 2 movies in the afternoon. I got a senior citizen discount here in New York. But in the beginning, I thought I'd go for 5 movies or 4 movies a week. The first 6 months, I got time to go to 1 movie. So I'll keep busy. I'm on the board here. I'm on the compensation committee. I'm the executive committee. I'm on the finance committee. I told you earlier in this conversation, I think we're going to go for money now. I'm goosing the new chairman. I'm on the committee. I said, I just think we don't want to miss a window of opportunity. It's just the rates are low and stock prices are high. We could choose which way to go.
How many companies do you think you were personally involved in acquiring during your tenure with the company?
Everyone except Sonneborn. My father, which was the biggest and probably the best. I give him credit for that in the first. Remember, we didn't go public till 58, and he was still active till then. I said overseas, he did almost all the negotiation, picking the company. Hello? Hold on a second, I'll turn here. This? Dorothy, this is for you. Sonneborn was his. He knew Rudolph, the man that had a stroke from a social club here, and handled that one almost all the way. After that, they started coming by 58. That was the Sonneborn 60. Then the International kept him busy. Otherwise, every one of them reported directly. I mean, the acquisition, one man on acquisition reported directly to me, and then I handle the negotiations, and people feel comfortable with me. I really feel comfortable because I'm really a very decent, honest man. Money is secondary. Literally is. And reputation is important in our industry, and motivation of people. I followed policy of promotion from within. It's a good company to work for. If you work here, you're going to get promoted if you're any good. And I say, four top people are all going to be out. But it'll be a whole new echelon of people. Great opportunity.